Broadcasting.
Good afternoon. I'm opening this meeting of the House Committee on Revenue. It's Monday, June 14th. Before we start on our agenda, could we please have a roll call for attendance?
Representative Levy.
Levy present by video.
Representative Marsh.
Marsh is here by video.
Representative Smith. Excused. Representative Valderrama.
Valderrama present by phone.
Vice Chair Pham.
Pham is present by video.
Vice Chair Reschke.
Reschke present by video.
Madam Chair Nathanson.
Nathanson present by video. We have a number of people with us tonight. We ask that for right now, only committee members have their cameras on and microphones on. And as we call on people to testify, please remember to turn your camera on so that we can see you if you have a camera and the technology that's cooperating at the time. We're going to do the agenda not in the order in which it's printed. We have a couple of work sessions on the agenda, and I anticipate those won't take too long. So we're going to do the work sessions first. I'm opening a work session on Senate Bill 25A.
Yes, Madam Chair, members of the committee, Mazen Malik with Legislative Revenue Office. Senate Bill 25A that you heard on 6-9 or June 9th last Wednesday, to refresh your memory about the bill. This is the bill that changes the funding model for the Secretary of State Corporation Division, funding the costs. Currently, under current law, each transaction, the Secretary of State Corporation Division does for registry of businesses keeps $20 of that transaction to fund their operations, and the rest is transferred to the general fund. Under this amended bill, Senate Bill 25A, that model changes to become the transfer to the general fund happens after the deduction of monthly costs by the corporation division based on the approved budgets by the Ways and Means Committee for that biennium, while keeping reasonable reserves. That's how this change in model from the revenue to the expenditure type of funding. You also have, and probably have seen in your packet, the revenue impact statement on that measure. The impact for the 21-23 biennium is not expected to bump against the $20 ceiling, and slightly still would have be below that, which means there actually would be an additional revenue of $1.5 million transferred to the general fund. And that changes, of course, in 23-25 and 25-27, reaching 6.3 million. You also have a fiscal impact of no expenditure impact. And of course, the no expenditure impact does not mean that there will be no budget type of funding for the Secretary of State. That's what you have in front of you.
Thank you. Representative Reschke.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And Mr. Malik, just so I'm clear that the budget gets set by Ways and Means for the Secretary of State's office and their corporate division. And so once that budget threshold is reached by these fees and filing, the excess would go to the general fund. Is that a correct characterization if we ever get to an excess?
President Reschke, that is correct. The Ways and Means would set an expenditure limitation because this money comes in, so it has continuous appropriation. It would set expenditure limitation for the Secretary of State. They would use that from that money that comes in, the expenditure limitation, and they would fund their operation, and the rest would be transferred to the general fund monthly.
Thank you.
And just to, I guess, to add to that answer, there will continuous be general fund transfers in about, the neighborhood of about $70 million a biennium in total from the registry fees. So not, this is not meant to only fund the operation of the corporation division, but still generate a significant amount of money for the general fund.
Madam Chair, are you ready for a motion?
Can you wait just a second? We're sure. Going, hang on just a second. I just need a few seconds.
Looks like representatives, oh, there
yes. That, yes, that's why we need just a few seconds here.
I'm sorry about that, Madam Chair. I had trouble getting in. Thank you for your patience.
There we go. Thank you. Rep Smith is with us now. Thank you, Rep Reschke. Yes, we're ready for a motion.
Chair Nathanson, I move Senate Bill 25A as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation. I don't know if it's amended. I just moved Senate Bill 25A to the floor.
You are correct, Rep. Reschke. We don't have an amendment at this meeting. You can just move it to the floor with a due pass. So I know that's the spirit in which you made the motion. Vice Chair Reschke moves Senate Bill 25A to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Any discussion or questions? I'm not seeing any right now, so let's have a roll call vote.
Representative Levy?
Levy votes yes.
Representative Marsh?
Marsh votes yes.
Representative Smith?
Representative Smith votes aye.
Representative Valderrama?
Valderrama votes aye.
Vice Chair Pham?
Pham votes aye.
Vice Chair Reschke?
Reschke votes aye.
Madam Chair Nathanson?
Nathanson votes aye. Motion passes. We need to assign a carrier. And I'm going to ask Representative Greg Smith.
Wonderful. Thank you, Madam Chair. I'd be honored to.
Thank you so much. Representative Smith will carry this. That concludes our business on Senate Bill 25A. I'm closing that work session. I'm opening a work session on Senate Bill 743.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, Dave Beck, Legislative Revenue Office. So you also heard this bill last Wednesday. And as you are aware, there are two changes in the bill for the purpose of distributing state school fund. In particular, the bill addresses a school district's ADMW calculation when the school district is a sponsor of a virtual public charter school. So there's one permanent change and there's one temporary change over 2 years. The permanent change is about ensuring brick and mortar schools' funding stability when its ADM, their ADM is declining. And the second temporary change for a couple of years is it's widely expected that a virtual charter school enrollment will see a drop this year and coming year and the next. The change is to try and avoid overfunding to these virtual charter schools relative to their operation cost. So you have on all this, you have a minimal fiscal impact statement. And then there's also a revenue statement that says that there's no change in formula revenue available for distribution to school districts and ESDs. But there's an anticipation of shifts among school districts. And that's all I have, Madam Chair.
Thank you. And please correct me if I'm wrong, but there are no amendments to this bill. Is that correct?
No amendment. And the testimonies were all in favor too.
Yeah, thank you. Committee. Any questions or discussion before we go to a motion? And I'm not seeing any hands yet. We could take a motion.
Chair Nathanson, I move Senate Bill 743 to the floor with a do pass recommendation.
Thank you. Vice Chair Pham moves Senate Bill 743 to the floor with a do pass recommendation. Is there discussion? I'm not seeing any hands. Let's have a vote. Roll call vote.
Representative Levy.
Levy votes yes.
Representative Marsh.
Marsh votes yes.
Representative Smith.
Representative Smith votes aye.
Representative Valderrama.
Valderrama votes aye.
Vice Chair Pham.
Pham votes aye.
Vice Chair Reschke.
Reschke votes no.
Madam Chair Nathanson.
Nathanson votes aye. Motion passes. I will let you know the carrier by tomorrow morning. I have an idea. I just need to check in for permission. Anything else on this before we close the work session on Senate Bill 743? Okay, I'm closing the work session on Senate Bill 743. Now we will move to a public hearing. I'm opening the public hearing on Senate Bill 164A.
Chair Nathanson and members of the committee, this is Caitlin Harger with the Legislative Revenue Office. Senate Bill 164A is the cap bill for this session. I'm going to briefly share my screen to just show a kind of cheat sheet that goes through the bill section by section, showing where the concepts are. So hopefully you can see my screen now. And so I'll go through these briefly, but of course I'm happy to expand on anything if you'd like more detail. One of the changes being made in the bill is to accommodate fiscal year filers. So currently the statutes related to the CAT are based on calendar year filing. So the business's fiscal year is the calendar year, but there are a number of businesses and there was a lot of feedback from industry that fiscal year filing different from from, excuse me, calendar year filing would create a lot of administrative issues. So this change in the bill aligns language so that it can, so that statute deals with both fiscal year filing and calendar year filing. So this is kind of more inclusive to those filers. The second change is the exchange of new vehicles between franchise dealerships. Are you able to hear me okay? I just got a message. My network is bad. Okay, just let me know if I need to stop.
The sound is breaking up just a tiny bit. You might want to turn off your camera for a minute or so.
Okay, I will try that.
Thank you.
That works. So the exchange of new vehicles between franchise dealerships, this was based on some testimony that came from the auto industry, saying that often new vehicles are transferred between dealerships, but not necessarily being sold, or not necessarily in terms of commercial activity. And so this change to the link to just address that portion of industry. The third change here is changing net revenue, which is mentioned currently in statute, to receipts. The CAT statutes are all based on commercial activity, which uses the phrase receipts often. Net revenue was more of an income tax concept, and so this is a change to language to better align throughout statute. The next change we have is the grocery outlet change, which I believe the committee heard some testimony about earlier in session. So grocery outlets facilitates that the independent operators that are operating the grocery outlet stores within the state were paying tax on the groceries that they sold, but the kind of corporate level of the grocery outlet, so not the store operators, but the actual grocery outlet corporate, was not paying taxes on the groceries that were sold. So based on that business model, we've adjusted statute to exclude grocery sales from the independent operators' taxable base. The next change is due to the retaliatory tax. So the key point here is that when we increase taxes in Oregon for insurers, which the CAT was an increase in taxes on insurers, then for an Oregon-based company, every state in which they operate, they will see an increase in their taxes via the retaliatory tax. And this is kind of holding everything else equal. So if you think about a company that is located in Oregon and operates in many other states, while they're seeing a slight tax increase in Oregon, they're seeing a tax increase in 49 other states. So the way that this is written is to exclude the foreign and alien insurers from paying the CAT. And this avoids that retaliatory impact for the domestic insurers operating in other states. That's a retaliatory tax change. There's another minor change to statute that says that leased vehicles, you can also collect the CAT at the point of sale for leased vehicles. There's also a technical change that extends the deadline for businesses that have been closed or sold. I believe the previous deadline was 45 days after the closure sale. The new change allows it to be filed with their normal return, so in the fourth month following the end of their tax year. And then finally, the tax administration penalty alignment references in the bill to specific administration penalties. The goal here is to be all-encompassing, to not point to a specific penalty, but in general allow the penalties so the department can generally the last thing I'll mention is that I believe is Rep. Reschke's amendment, and it excludes from commercial activity amounts received as reimbursements for healthcare related to medical assistance, Medicare and Medicaid, TRICARE, PEB, the Oregon Educators Benefit Board, and the Children's Health Insurance Program.
Committee members, since the audio was still a little bit sketchy, do you have any questions for LRO? And I'll ask Mr. Alanak to respond to the questions in case there was something you feel like you didn't hear quite enough about or it wasn't clear. I don't see any hands yet. I think that means that we can just move to the public hearing now. So I know that you all will get my attention if you need to ask a question later. Okay, that completes our introduction to the bill. We will now move to the witnesses who have signed up. First, I'd like to hear from Bart Bruins. After that will be Chuck Chappell, followed by Kathleen Harder, followed by Jeff Newgard, and then I'll call some other names after that.
Great, thank you. I hope you all can hear me. My name is Bart Bruns. Am I on video, and can you hear me okay?
I can hear you just fine. I'm not seeing you on my screen, but maybe others are.
Okay. Well, I'll do my best. Let me go ahead and move along. Regardless, I'm glad you can hear me. So Chair Nathanson, thank you. Vice Chair Reschke and FAM, thank you both, and for the rest of the members of the committee. We appreciate an opportunity to speak to you. My name, again, is Bart Bruns. I'm a physician. I work in Roseburg. I've been in Roseburg, Oregon for 22 years, and I'm speaking on behalf of the Douglas County Independent Physicians Association. I am speaking in support of the A13 amendment. This amendment was about the corporate activity tax and how the implementation would potentially also affect our public insurers, that is the Oregon Health Plan and all of our federal insurers, including Medicare and Medicare Advantage plans. You know, we're all about the purpose of this tax. And, you know, being a resident of Douglas County and having two of my kids go through the school systems, I am all about supporting the schools. The physicians in Douglas County are struggling with this, and that's why we're in support of this A13 amendment. We have, as is typical of other areas of Oregon that are rural, about one in three of our patients that we take care of are on the Oregon Health Plan. We recognize we need to maintain access for those patients, and similar to our Medicare patients, we need to try to do everything we can for our physicians to be able to take care of these folks. And it's difficult for us when both Medicaid and Medicare are among our lowest paying contracts for the care that we provide, and we have zero ability to impact the rates that we get paid by Medicare and Medicaid. So we can't pass these expenses off to take care of these patients like many other small businesses or corporations might be able to do. So it's basically just another cost that we have to absorb as physicians in rural communities. So I would ask, and again, we're all about supporting the participation in all of these public payer programs, Medicare, of course, all of our Medicaid and OHP patients, but we want to make this work, and we don't want to disincentivize our physicians from taking care of these patients because it's just another liability that they'll tack on to the corporate activity tax. So I would ask just that you consider this A13 amendment, and I appreciate your time.
Thank you for your testimony. And I also appreciate that you kept your remarks to about 3 minutes. I didn't announce that earlier, but generally we do like to keep the remarks to about 3 minutes each. We have 10 people signed up for testimony on this bill, and we'll be able to get through everybody if you keep comments succinct. And by the way, I do see the camera now that my screen refreshed and we got a good video signal. So thank you for your testimony. Next is Chuck.
Thank you.
Chapel, did I get that right? And followed by Kathleen Harder, then Jeff Newgard, then Billy Muzio. Chuck Chapel. You're on mute. We're ready for you to begin. How about we will come back to you in a few minutes. We'll see if it'll work in a few minutes. Let's move to Kathleen Harder.
Hi, can you all?
Please go ahead.
Hi, thank you. Good evening, Chair Nathanson, Vice Chairs Pham and Reschke, and members of the committee. I'm Dr. Kathleen Harder. I'm a physician and partner at Salem Clinic, a physician-owned multi-specialty clinic in Salem, and I'd like to speak as well to the proposed amendment A13 to Senate Bill 164. I apologize that I cannot connect with you via video. I'm having technical difficulties. As healthcare providers, we are tasked with the goal of improving the health of our patients we care for, and some of the most fragile patients deserving that quality care are those covered by governmental payers. However, the governmental payers do not pay what it costs to provide the members the services they require. I hear frequently in the community, as members of the committee probably do as well, that people cannot find a provider who accepts Medicare. The manner in which the corporate activity tax is implemented will further limit how many of these patients healthcare providers can afford to care for. So as an example, in 2020, our organization was subject to the corporate activity tax, which amounted to an effective rate of 86.4% of our net income. Of that tax, 42.65% was referable to care provided through governmental payers. Even if we had had no net income at the end of a very challenging year that 2020 was, we still would have been subject to a very large amount of corporate activity tax due. And as our previous presenter stated, we are very much in favor of what this tax is designed to do. We just don't want it to impact how we can take care of patients. As was also mentioned earlier, we cannot pass on the cost of the tax to the end consumer due to contractual limitations. However, we still experience the taxes on all the goods and services we purchase by those entities that can pass on the tax. As providers, we want to provide quality care to all those who need it. We're not obligated to accept these payers, but we want to do so as part of our public service to those in our community. And in some communities, this is a very large portion of the population, especially those at both extremes of the age range. We want providers to participate in these important governmental programs, which take care of the most fragile medically and socioeconomically patients, but the tax is making it difficult for us to do so. We do believe that this amendment will allow us to continue to provide the care that our patients deserve. Thank you, Chair Nathanson, and your committee. I would be happy to answer any questions you might have.
Thank you for the testimony. Next will be Jeff Newgard, followed by Billy Muzio, and I will go back to Chuck Chapel in a few minutes.
Thank you, Chair Nathanson, Vice Chairs Reschke and Pham, and members of the committee. For the record, I'm Jeff Newgard, representing the Smart Growth Coalition. We're a consortium of traded sector businesses with significant investments in jobs and capital projects in Oregon. I'll be quick today, but I wanted to just drop in and acknowledge our support of the engrossed version of Senate Bill 164 and its provisions easing the compliance and administrative burden for taxpayers that use non-calendar fiscal year accounting. The Department of Revenue estimates that roughly 4,000 businesses likely subject to the tax use non-calendar fiscal years. Since current law requires businesses to track sales and expenses according to the calendar year, these businesses must maintain separate books and records for every entity in every jurisdiction solely for the Oregon CAT. To put it simply, the calendar year requirement is unnecessarily burdensome and complicated, and it's really in the best interest of both taxpayers and auditors to align the accounting information used to compute the tax. We respectfully ask for your support of the A and Gross bill. Thank you, and I'm happy to answer any questions.
Thank you for being with us tonight. And for all of you, if there's anything written testimony you wanted to provide that you didn't, you do have 24 hours from when the meeting started today. You have until tomorrow to submit written testimony. And if you want to stay around, in case something comes up, please feel free to stay in the room with us, but with your camera and mic off. Okay, and that was Mr. Newgard. Thank you again. Billy Muzio, and after that will be Bill Perry, then Scott Bruin. Billy Muzio. I'm not hearing you, Mr. Muzio. Are you using a phone also? We're not, at least I'm not getting any sound. Other committee members seem to also be experiencing that. We're not hearing you.
How about now?
I can hear you. That's okay. Great.
It changed my settings when I logged back in. I apologize. Okay, let me start over. So good evening, Madam Chair and members of the committee. My name is Billy Muzio, and I'm an independent operator for Grocery Outlet. I own and operate my own small business here in Bend, Oregon. I'm here this afternoon to support Senate Bill 164A from the independent operators' perspective who contract with Grocery Outlet and operate their stores. As I've stated previously, when the CAT tax was written and passed, it was understood that groceries were excluded from the CAT tax, which we support, and it appears that this technical fix does resolve our concerns. And as you know from previous statements, our business model is very unique. All of us Oregon mom pops operate on consignment, and our business model allows for us to deliver superior customer service personalized to each of the local communities that we serve. We do not own the product. We sell the product for a small portion of the profits, yet under the current legislation, we're responsible for 100% of the tax bill. Given our unique problem, we support and encourage this technical fix, and I welcome any questions.
Thank you for joining us. Appreciate the testimony. I don't see any questions. Let's go now to Bill Perry, followed by Scott Bruin, but I am going to call on Chuck Chappell in a few minutes. Mr. Perry.
Can you hear me, Chair?
Yes, I can. Hear me?
Okay. Go ahead. Bill Perry, if you're Bill Perry with the Oregon Auto Dealers Association, and here, and you guys have heard me talk about this because we did talk on the House bill, but we support 165A in its current form. There are two different areas that staff obviously spoke about. The first was the dealer-to-dealer transfers, and so even though we get a bill of sale for new cars, we only pay the interest until the car is sold, so this allows us to transfer vehicles, as we can see now, if you driven by lots, a lot of the lots are empty. So, you know, you might go to a lot of a retail dealer, they might not have the car, so they'll call a different retailer to have them ship it over. And this allows the bill of sale to be transferred, but the money will still go to the manufacturer when the vehicle is sold. The second part is the bottom of page 8, and that's adding the word lease. Since a lot of cars are sold at lease, we've actually run into the problem where some leasing companies considered it as sales, but some leasing companies did not consider it as sales under the CAT tax. So this just makes it uniform across the board, and so everybody will treat the sale of a leased lease sale the same. So with that, I'm happy to answer any questions.
Thank you for the testimony.
Okay, thank you.
And I don't see any questions right now. Scott Bruin.
Okay, well, thank you, Madam Chair and Committee. I promise to be very quick. We testified in support of this, Senate Bill 164, now 164A on the Senate side, and our written testimony is still in OLIS if anybody would like to look at that. But really, Madam Chair and Committee, we wanted to get on record to say how grateful we are that you were able to juggle some timelines, and I know that committees are closing and everything else. So this is an important bill for a lot of businesses, especially the fiscal year end fix, and just want to get on record and say thank you to you and the committee.
Thank you for that. And you know what? One of us might have heard it, another one didn't. Would you say your name for the record, just in case?
Oh, I probably glad. Yeah, my name is Scott Bruin, and I'm the Director of Tax Policy for Oregon Business and Industry. My apologies.
That's all right. Thank you very much. And I don't see any questions yet. I'm going to call on, this is a good time to ask if Mr. Charles Chappell is with us again, if maybe that technical connection problem has been resolved.
Can you hear me, Chair Nathanson?
I can hear you.
Wow, wonderful. Sorry, I had to disconnect my video, so you'll have to just hear me. I appreciate the time to give testimony to you and your committee. I was asked by Dr. Bruns and PacWest just to give some information to you about what a typical independent practice of medicine in Douglas County, Roseville would look like. You know, I'm here in support of the A13 Amendment. And just to give you an idea of what a practice would look like in Douglas County is the typical payer mix is approximately 75% would be government funded and 25% would be commercial funded. So the majority of the revenue that a physician's office will receive is basically made up from Medicaid and Medicare. And so it's a big portion of that. And at the same time, a physician's practice receives roughly 50% of the normal rate from these government payers compared to what the commercial payers are. So it puts quite a burden on the practice if there's additional tax or expenses against their practices the way that they currently practice in our community, given the large amount of Medicaid and Medicare population that they serve. Now, I'm not sure that I told you, but I'm a CPA here also in Roseville, Oregon, and also the CFO for Douglas County Independent Physician Association. One of the things that's taken place also is to, if you will, to reduce cost. Many of the practices have come together and joined together so that they could, share in the overhead and reduce overhead. Because of that, the exemption that's $1 million, if they practice by themselves, they wouldn't have the cat tax. But by practicing together, they're subjecting themselves to this cat tax. So that's been a problem for many of them. And so the cap tax has fallen, if you will, on these independent practitioners. They're still small businessmen or women, but they have joined forces. And so they have to either do something differently, possibly in the future, as to reduce costs. And that's really the only pieces that I have for you. So I appreciate your time. I'll take any questions.
Thank you. And would you please say your name for the record?
Sure. Chuck Chappell.
Thanks very much. Great.
You're welcome.
So now let's hear from Brian Chen Kai, followed by Nikki Dobe.
All right. Well, thank you very much. Well, good evening, Chair Nathanson, members of the committee. My name is Brian Chen Kai, and I'm an ophthalmologist at iHealth Northwest in Portland, and I subspecialize in retinal diseases. Our practice comprises 42 eye care providers. We cover nearly all ophthalmic subspecialties. We have 13 offices, 2 surgery centers, our own optical lab, and a research study division. I'm here to speak in favor of the A13 amendment to Senate Bill 164. Everyone needs access to ophthalmology services, and subspecialties can really apply to any age, but common conditions like diabetic eye disease, macular degeneration, glaucoma, cataracts, definitely skew towards older individuals. The majority of our business is funded through the federal government's Medicare program with another sizable component through the area's CCO Medicaid members. And of course, these rates are primarily dictated by CMS, so providers have really little to no wiggle room to account for the decreased revenue resulting from the cap tax. A large portion of my own practice is devoted to injecting medications into patients' eyes in order to optimize the retina's function and to prevent the devastating consequence of permanent vision loss. These medications, which we purchase, are in turn reimbursed by insurance. And this can be a large sum of money, upwards of about $1.5 million per month. But it's really just a cycle. It's a churn where the reimbursement that we get really just pays off what we own, what we owe the pharmaceutical manufacturers. So even though there's a large efflux and inflow of funds, the net benefit to us is simply just to be able to keep treating our patients. Yet we're still taxed on this influx of Medicare and Medicaid reimbursement. So, you know, even though the tax itself is a small percentage, the actual dollar amount for us has a huge implication on our financial solvency. In addition to our own tax, we've also recently started receiving invoices from vendors to cover their tax. So for example, we just recently got a bill from one of our suppliers, Bessie, and the only item on the invoice is corporate activity tax to the amount of $12,764. So the vendors get to pass this cost directly onto us, but of course we can't pass it on any further downstream. So in effect, it's acting like a double taxation. In the background of all this, of course, we continue to spend extra money to accommodate our clinics with respect to COVID-19 protocols, so the additional staff, screener positions, supplies, and so on. So an additional tax at this time is really just another threat to the delivery of necessary healthcare to Oregonians. The A13 amendment adds language exempting the business receipts associated with Medicare, Medicaid, TRICARE, OEPP, and PEBB service payments, similar to the exemptions for residential care facilities and in-home care agencies that already currently exist. So on a personal note, I also want to say that I support the idea of progressive tax laws to help right some of the glaring societal inequities that we face. You know, that said, I believe all of us here have an analogous challenge in the sense that our, you know, in our profession, sometimes the course that we initially choose doesn't achieve the intended goal, so it behooves us to recalibrate and adjust. I think there can be legislation that is more surgically precise than what we currently have in Senate Bill 164, and passing Amendment A13 is a step in that direction. It'll help healthcare providers maintain the high level of service that, to which we aspire. And I'm really grateful for the opportunity to discuss this important issue and look forward to ongoing conversations with legislators on sensible solutions such as A13. Thank you.
Thank you. And could you stick with us for a minute? It looks like Representative Marsh might have a question. Is that correct?
Thank you, Chair Nathanson. I do. Thank you, Brian, for being here. You mentioned receiving an invoice for CAT tax from a vendor. Did that vendor provide a calculation as to how they arrived at the total they were billing?
No, I think it's just a bill, and I'm happy to share it with you. pulling it up here as we talk. Where is it? No, I mean, it's just remit this balance, $12,764.80.
Was it, Madam Chair, another follow-up, was it for a dedicated period of time?
That I'm not sure. I'll need to talk to my administrator about that one. I apologize, I don't have the answer to that.
That's all right. I'm going to press a little bit on this. As you know, and most people on this committee do already understand, the corporate activity tax is not a transaction tax, and it would not be possible to determine on an individual transaction what might be attributable. But if that's for, as Rep. Marsh was asking, for a specific period of time, like for 3 months or 6 months or a year or something, that might be helpful to know. So if it would be possible for you to send us information about what that invoice looks like, how it was calculated or something.
Yeah, no, absolutely. How would be the best way to do it? Would it be to upload to the testimony page, or how would you like that done?
Let's see, Mr. Allenat, could you please let us know what the most appropriate way is for us to receive this kind of, it might be sort of sensitive information because it might have some very specific data about your business in it, which you might want to cross out or something. Yeah. Mr. Allenat, could you tell us what the best way is for us to
look at this? I would suggest you could just send it to me. My email address is on our website.
Okay.
I could also give you a call. When you signed up, you have your phone number, so I can reach out afterwards this and give you my email address. But that's probably the most direct way, Madam Chair.
Perfect. Thanks. Yeah, I mean, I'm receiving information real that there was no calculation on it. So I'm happy to provide that follow up. Thank you.
Thank you as well. And thank you, Representative Marsh, for raising that. Do you have any additional follow ups that you might like Mr. Allenack to pursue?
That was my question. Thank you. Thank you, Chair.
Okay. Next, let's go to Nikki Dobay, and that will be followed by Exanne Culver.
Good evening, Madam Chair. Can you hear me okay?
Yes, I can.
Okay. Good evening, Madam Chair, Nathanson, members of the committee. My name is Nikki Dobay. I'm a state and local tax partner with Evershed Sutherland. I'm testifying here today in support of Senate Bill 164A on behalf of the Standard Insurance. Specifically, I'm here to support the provision that relates to the clarification for foreign or alien insurers being excluded from the CAT. Senate Bill 164A makes clear that those non-Oregon insurers are not subject, which non-Oregon insurers which are subject to Oregon's retaliatory tax are not subject to the CAT. And this is very important for Oregon-based insurers due to the impact this will have on them in other states due to their retaliatory taxes. So this is a very important issue for Standard. We would like to thank the committee for its time and efforts with respect to this issue and do urge a do pass recommendation on 164A, and happy to answer any questions.
Thanks for being with us. I don't see any questions yet. Can you stay in the room? Can everybody stay in the room just another few minutes in case a question comes up? Let's go to Exanne Culver.
Good evening, Madam Chair, members of the committee. I'm Exanne Culver with the Oregon Department of Revenue. The engrossed version of Senate Bill 164 addresses the technical issues that we identified during public hearing in Senate Finance and Revenue, and also in your public hearing on House Bill 2429. My written testimony is in OLIS, and it lists those issues and the corrections that are in the bill. The bill also does include modifications to the tax year, as Mr. Newgard had mentioned, and it will allow taxpayers to report and pay their CAT for the federal tax period or fiscal year when that is not a calendar year. And we did work with those stakeholders on the language, and we have no concerns with it, with the bill as it is currently written. I just wanted to highlight for you that we are able to implement all of the changes in the bill, and I'm here to answer any questions if you have any.
Thank you. This completes the list of witnesses that I had printed out prior to the hearing, but that was a few minutes before the cutoff time, probably. LRO, could you please confirm whether that completes the list of witnesses who had signed up?
Yes, it does, Madam Chair.
Thank you. I'm going to wait just a couple of a few more seconds here before I close the public hearing in case any committee members are trying to raise a hand to ask a question. I'm not seeing any at this time. I'm closing the public hearing on Senate Bill 164A. Mr. Allenack, is there anything else to let us know about before we adjourn today's meeting?
Madam Chair, just that I suspect you will have a meeting on Wednesday. At least I expect a work session on 164 in all likelihood. And then there are a couple of one or two bills on the Senate floor tomorrow for third reading. I don't know how quickly those might, assuming they pass and assuming they get over here, those might be on the agenda. But we're at that time of session where when we're kind of waiting for bills to cross chambers. So just keep an eye out for another meeting.
Okay.
Madam Chair, if I might, what I heard Mr. Alanak say is the Senate is slow, and so we're just going to have to wait for their stuff to get over here.
Yeah.
You heard that also? So did I.
Oh. You're getting in trouble, Chris.
Notice I picked House Revenue to say that and not JTAC. So, you know.
Yep.
You know what I have to work with every day? Those two boys?
You know when you're among friends, Rep. Rushke.
Committee members, officially, any other last comments before we adjourn? Okay. Thank you all for tonight. I'll see you at the next meeting. We're adjourned.
Bye-bye.